Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a wonderful Father's Day. Just some grilling and some swimming and some hoop watching here at the Gottlieb House. All we did. Congruent arguments, right? If I make an argument about one, I got to make the same argument for another. It's consistency. It's all we look for, really, in officiating, right? You know, it's not if it's a foul. It's if you call the foul one end, you call a foul at the other end. Calling it tight at one end, call it tight at the other end. I understand in business and in context, some things are, in fact, different, right? You know, people talk about how long a coach has had a job and how much leash they should get. It's like, I think Becky Hammon to the Portland Trailblazers would be an abject disaster. It just is, because they're not really a team that's in championship contention mode. They're just not. They have Damian Lillard, and then they have, you know, one other very talented scoring wing, but not necessarily all-star type. You have to have two stars, really, to compete at the top of the NBA. You know, look, if the Clippers had Kawhi, they're right there. The Lakers, if they have Anthony Davis and LeBron, they're right there. You know, the Phoenix Suns, they have Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and to a lesser extent, DeAndre Ayton, which makes up for some of Chris Paul's shortcomings in his age, but still. The Denver Nuggets, the reason they couldn't win it, they didn't have Jamal Murray. They have Jamal Murray and Jokic. They're right there. The Mavericks thought they had two with Porzingis, but he's not nearly to the level of everybody else. So you got to have two. Portland does not have two. And it's going to be really hard for them to build one. And, you know, you have the expectations of a championship caliber team. I don't know. Whereas to me, the best chance she has to succeed, and she's a finalist for the Portland job, is to stay in San Antonio, where everybody in that organization has seen her work. And if she's done good work, they'll respect her when she makes that move over and Greg Popovich ultimately retires. And oh yeah, by the way, they're kind of in rebuild mode now anyway. So I do understand that coaches, every job you take over is different. The expectations are different. But for players, and look, for coaches, their ability to make adjustments, sometimes some comes down to the players that they have and the matchup that they have as well. But LeBron James, I think what happens is when you don't consider somebody the greatest of all time, if I said, hey, LeBron James is different and unique and one of the greatest players of all time. Is he the greatest of all time? Like, the best I've ever seen is Michael Jordan. And I would say that Larry Bird and Magic Johnson were right there. They didn't have the length of consecutive successes that LeBron has had. But at their peak, they were ever bit as dominant, if not more so. It's a different era. So you can't really compare, well, LeBron's a better shooter than Magic. Like, okay, Magic actually led the league in free throw percentage, even though he wasn't a particularly good three-point shooter, but three-point shooting wasn't the thing then. LeBron, I mean, even as many points as Larry Bird scored, think how many more he would have scored had people encouraged him to shoot threes. It was like we were bad at math back then. Anyway. For my money, you can't really have a top 10 list without including LeBron James. But also for my money, I wouldn't put him number one. And at their very peak, I'd probably take Bird Magic ahead of LeBron James since I've started watching basketball. That's just me. That said, when they lost to the San Antonio Spurs his last year in Miami, do you remember how that series went? Do you remember? Let's quiz some of the guys. Gavin, LeBron James last year in Miami.
Okay. Lost in the finals.
Okay. Who did they play? Okay, they lost to the Spurs. In game one, okay, they played in San Antonio in game one. That was the game that LeBron was, I believe, was that the game he was thoroughly dominating? He started cramping. Byer, do you remember? Was that the game he started cramping? Or was
yes,
the win?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. It was hot. The air conditioning went out in the building. And he was completely dominating the game. And then all of a sudden, his body started locking up and he started cramping. If you went back and watched that series, you would say, and they lost in five games.
Yeah.
Like it was a
one-man show.
Like, he was a one-man show. And my point then is my point about Kevin Durant. And this is where it's a congruent argument. Okay? I can still believe somebody's the best player on earth if they don't win a series. If they don't win a series. I saw Stephen A. Smith on TV today say, like, the number one reason the Nets didn't win was karma. Like, no, it's not. It's because Kyrie was hurt and James Harden was hurt. Right? They had complete control of the series when those guys were healthy. And, yeah, he shot an air ball with a chance to win it. I mean, he scored the last, I think, 9 points or 8 points in regulation to force overtime. And he had some turnovers. He had some bad shots. He had some bad looks, but... like, I'm not really sure what you're supposed... when a team is built with a three-headed monster and basically everybody else outside of Spencer Dinwiddie is on a one-year deal, right? And a minimum deal. Like, you're getting what you pay for. You're getting what you... those guys are available for a reason. Available for a reason. And I think it's interesting to me how... you have to make this, if you make this argument about Kevin Durant, you can, which is he didn't have enough help and he ran out of gas. That's what happened to LeBron in Miami. I don't think that's what happened when he was in Cleveland in year two, in year one, right? Or the first time they went to the finals, I do think, remember, Kyrie got hurt. They just didn't have the horses. Matthew Dellavedova was a pain in the tuchus for a couple of games to Steph, then Steph figured it out. Still, he didn't have a good enough supporting cast. The next year when they did, they came back, they had Kyrie Irving, he was healthy. They did have a good enough supporting cast. But what I saw from Kevin Durant this weekend, and then going back to last week, and was, regardless of whether or not they won the series, and they did not, Durant is unequivocally the best all-around player in the NBA. He's not the greatest defensive player, but he's damn well good enough. And he's the greatest scorer. I mean, think about the challenges. And you get people saying, like, well, why'd Joe Harris shoot so poorly? Well, because you can spend a lot more paying attention to Joe Harris when you don't have Kyrie Irving, when you don't have James Harden. Like, James Harden, normally, you got to defend with a guy and a half. Kyrie Irving, a guy and a half. Kevin Durant, a guy and a half for two guys. That leaves somebody open. That somebody is a guy who has led the NBA in shooting. Now you play a special level of attention to detail to defending him, and Joe Harris became just another guy. Durant, on the other hand, when there was more attention paid to him, delivered even more. If we're going to call Kevin Durant the best player in the world, I have to be fair and say, was there a point where LeBron was like this as well? And yes, and I've said that about LeBron. Even if I would tell you, like, if I'm being honest, I would take Jordan ahead of him. And it's hard because his career has basically been twice as long in terms of staying healthy as Larry Bird. I'd probably take Bird, but they're actually, their skill sets have some similarities in terms of their ability to pass, to create for others, to create for themselves. Bird was just a much better scorer, a great rebounder, just a very different athlete in a very different era.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So, again, this is where you're like, Doug, you got to make congruent arguments. Players are, in terms of their makeup, different, right? And this is where, like, LeBron is not Jordan. Anybody ever watch Jordan play? They're just very, very different. There's a lot more Magic Johnson to LeBron than there is Jordan to LeBron, which is the same in terms of the differences. And I'm like, wait, that's a weird sentence. But in DeAndre Ayton and Rudy Gobert, right? Rudy Gobert, you couldn't play him at all. You just couldn't play him against the Clippers because he was so lost on defense because there wasn't anybody he could stay in the lane and block shots. And his natural instinct was to go and protect the rim. Meanwhile, their rotations were terrible. And it felt like for the Clippers, somebody was always open. So you might ask yourself, well, why can't the Clippers do that to the Suns? And the answer is, well, DeAndre Ayton's not Rudy Gobert. DeAndre Ayton is a decent defensive player as a big man, but he's an outstanding offensive player. And so the mismatch on defense could still be there, but it's a massive mismatch when the Suns are on offense. Does that make sense?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
I know you're going to talk some Bucks basketball. Jim Paschke coming on. Kudos to him for an amazing career with the Milwaukee Bucks. So I just wanted to say that as a Wisconsin guy, just to pass that along. Doug, back to you.
I will. Let's talk a little about them. They obviously survived the Nets. I just survived the Nets. That was an incredible game. Were you on the couch for that one too?
Yes. That was 3.5 hours of something. It was great. It ended great. It could have. It was. I mean, the Brook Lopez play. Like we were even talking
what
about.
What was
it
he
before
doing?
The show. I don't know, because in the timeout he was even telling the guys like, be strong with the ball. So I don't know if that's where his focus was, but to not get the shot off, because even if he gets the shot off and then it hits the rim, it takes so much more time off the clock. Even if Brooklyn ends up getting that rebound, and instead they had the full 6 seconds, and yeah, we saw what happened.
And then Durant hits a three, but he stepped on the line. Yeah. Like people are like, man, he stepped on the line. Like that shot was so hard. People get like, I can't believe he stepped on the line. I can't believe he made the shot.
Yeah. No. Both feet were on the line as well. And to your point, I think both teams were just completely gassed in overtime.
Yes.
And that's why I think Durant was just like, all right, let me just try to end it here and shot the air ball in the overtime. But I mean, Milwaukee was gassed. They were settling for everything in the first about 4 minutes. There are 2 points in like the first 4 minutes of overtime combined by both teams. It was awful.
I wish, you know, they cleared out for Durant. I wish he would have just, you know, driven it to that right side. And I thought he probably would have gotten a foul on Drew Holiday because Drew was being so physical, but he just looked completely gassed, completely gassed. And I mean, Harden wasn't himself and you don't have Kyrie, but the Bucks, I mean, to survive. And how about how bad Drew and Chris Middleton were? And then here they hit some big shots down the stretch. I mean, they were terrible for the first three quarters shooting the basketball.
Drew Holiday offensively was not good in the series, yet he had some of the biggest buckets, including in game three. He gave him the go-ahead bucket in that game that they needed to win. But overall, when you looked at him offensively,
bad.
Yeah, it was just bad. But when they needed shots from him, they hit him.
Yeah, it was something. You mentioned Jim Paschke, 40 years of broadcasting, and this is going to be his last. I mean, if you're going to go out, you go out with Ben. Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Doug. Thanks for having me on today.
You've seen a lot of ball games, a lot of series. Now we've had a chance to catch our breath. Game 7 in Brooklyn, how would you characterize that to somebody who does not have the wealth and depth of knowledge for not just all-time great Bucks games, but slugfest NBA games?
I'd put that game up against any game I've ever seen in the NBA. I know there are games that have been as good, or maybe some have been better, but the two Game 7s we saw this weekend, Doug, were at the top of my list, and certainly the Bucks game was one of the best Bucks games I've ever witnessed. Fantastic basketball, and Milwaukee overcame some problems that the Bucks had, but they prevailed, and it was a terrific night.
Isn't it amazing that we go from like Mike Budenholzer when the series felt like the Bucks couldn't compete with the Nets' overall talent? People were like, "Well, they're going to have to get rid of Bud." To now, they're going to be the favorite to get to the finals, and depending on the matchup, maybe the favorite to win the whole thing. Isn't it amazing how things change so quickly?
Well, I was a little bit disappointed after game two and the effort and the body language I saw from the Bucks. And I told a few people, I said, it's going to take four victories to rinse that taste. And sure enough, they came up and got those four victories. Game five wasn't pleasant either. They were up 17 and lost that game. But, you know, the playoffs are a different animal. The playoffs, I say it this way, we have to read the book all the way through before we decide whether or not we appreciate the book and what the book means. And that certainly played out again in this series. You have to read the book before you decide what to think about it.
Jim, how would you characterize Giannis's play in the series?
Well, he's had, in my opinion, another MVP season, but the way voting goes, I never expected that he would win the award three times. It just doesn't work like that. But he has done things this year that he hadn't done before. I think he was surpassing his last two seasons very often this year. He continues to be a singular talent in this league. And in this particular series, he ran up against Kevin Durant, who's probably the best player in basketball in the world right now. But Giannis has been at the top of his game for most of the season. And when the team plays together, Doug, when they pass the ball, assists have been something I've been really watching in this series. When they move the ball and Giannis is in the flow and Drew Holiday's in the flow, Middleton is in the flow, you can get away with some droughts, as we've seen from Chris and from Drew Holiday offensively. They'll come up in the fourth quarter. They'll get the job done. You'll appreciate what they do when the book is done. When you read the entirety of the book, you'll probably appreciate what they do. So Giannis has had a great season.
The free throw thing with the dribbling, you know, and how long it takes, and then the counting. How big a problem do you think that is as we head in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Well, Giannis has handled the counting from the fans. It hasn't bothered him a bit. You know, it's kind of interesting. The 10-second call came in the last minute of a game against Miami, and boy, that has taken on a life of its own. You know, the officials referee the game. They officiate the game, and they decide. They know how long it's taking, and they're making their rulings. So Giannis is going to have to put up with what is taunting on some level. But, you know, he'll handle it okay. He did all right the other night. He was 8 for 14, but, you know, he's constantly trying to improve that. He works on his free throw shooting all the time. And, you know, there was a point in the game the other night in overtime where I thought Giannis was going to go to the line, but the foul was called before any shot attempt. So it was a side court inbound. And, you know, that may have been a big play in that game. Had he missed one or two, it could have been a different outcome. But he's working on that constantly, and he's very dedicated to improving his free throw shooting. And he's had, I think, five or six games in his career where he has had quite a few free throws in a game without missing a free throw. So people forget those games, too.
Yeah, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jim Paschke joining us, legendary broadcaster of Milwaukee Bucks. Set to retire, maybe on a championship run to retire. Okay, so the matchup with the Hawks. So much of these series is about matchups. Obviously, the Bucks, and I don't know how much nationally it's been discussed, but Dante DiVincenzo was having his best year as a pro. He's a versatile guard at both ends of the floor. He can score. He's a very good athlete. So that changes the Bucks some for the worse moving forward. How do they match up with the Atlanta Hawks?
Well, I think Milwaukee has size that will be tough for the remaining teams to handle, to be honest with you, if they utilize it properly. The Bucks' size has been a great factor in the playoffs. It's not talked about very often, but I think that will be something to look for and to watch and see how that plays out. And then you have some great matchups. I assume Drew Holiday will try to slow down Trae Young. And you know, it's going to be interesting. Bogdanovich, that's a side story because it was reported, of course, that he was headed to Milwaukee in free agency, and that didn't take place. So that's going to be an interesting sidebar to all of this. Kevin Huerter has played very well against the Bucks, so you know, a lot to watch for. But I think Milwaukee's size, and again, if they move the ball and play together, they're going to be tough for Atlanta to handle, and they're going to be tough for whoever is beyond that should the Bucks prevail in this next round.
Have you thought of what it's going to be like to watch Bucks games next year and not call the games?
It's difficult. You know, we only worked through the first round. We got the four-game sweep against Miami, and I had already decided that this would be my last season. But I'm enjoying this very much. I am involved with the team. I am still with the Bucks until they're done. And, you know, we have different duties. We are I'm addressing the large crowd outside Fiserv Forum every night, whether it's a home game or a road game. And I think people have seen what kind of basketball fans and what kind of basketball spirit and intensity we have in the city of Milwaukee. And I know you know that well. You were born here, and you probably heard a lot of stories about Milwaukee in your time, too. But the city is showing very well, Doug, and it's been wonderful.
Yeah, they should move Summerfest up, right? They should just have Summerfest right there with the games. And I mean, it's like, look, my parents, you know, my mom to this day, we were talking about yesterday, she's over at my house, and she's like, Milwaukee's still the best summer city she has ever lived in. Just incredible community. And to see the fans outside, and obviously Toronto has done this previously, but it is spectacular. Well, listen, Jim, you do incredible work. My good friend Desmond Mason raves about you as a person and as a guy who has called so many of his games. We appreciate you joining us and look forward to seeing what the Bucks do in this upcoming Eastern Conference Finals.
Thank you, Doug. It's a great pleasure to be on with you, and hopefully we can speak in the future.
We'll do so soon. That's Jim Paske, who's been doing it forever, really. Like, he's the, you know, and with by the way, Marcus Johnson, who calls games for them. And Marcus is, I grew up playing with Chris Johnson, who's got a pod that we have on iHeart that's KJ Live. It's really good. Do I think the Nets would have won the series if they were healthy? Yeah. I think the Nets were better. But again, that's not, it's like, do I think I almost know the Warriors would have won the series against the Raptors, but that's just not the way sports works, right? If you're not healthy, you don't win. We don't let you go on to the next round. It's not how it works. And there is something to Milwaukee being rewarded by the sports gods. Right? They re-sign their star, and you know, like, look, we're on Giannis, like, because he can't shoot, but he's still putting up triple-double numbers every night. It's a pretty good story. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
It's interesting, Doug, because of what this series meant, and you just, you know, ask Jim Paske of people maybe not recognizing Milwaukee, and it's also just not the history of Milwaukee. It's the Bucks' history, because growing up in the 80s, the Celtics were obviously the standard that you tried to reach in the Eastern Conference. And the Bucks would either lose to the Celtics in like the Eastern Conference semifinals, or they'd face the Sixers or the Hawks in that time in like in a 4-5 matchup. But they played great series and they were always exciting. But Boston was always that level, and then they never got to it. And then it wasn't until like the end of when George Karl came in, I was going to say late 90s, early 2000s, when you had Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen, and then you make the deal and you have Sam Cassell come in there, and they had their big three. They lost to Philadelphia in 7 games in the Eastern Conference Final. And I know I'm rambling a bit, but the point being is, this past Saturday, that game 7 may have been the biggest Bucks game in my lifetime. My cousin even put that on social media. His point was, you know what, in 2001, it was a game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. They lost to the Sixers in Philadelphia, but they weren't going to beat the Lakers in the NBA Finals. The Lakers were just, Shaq and Kobe were just too much. But this game, if you don't win on Saturday, now your season's done, you lose in the Eastern Conference Semifinals, and people are looking at Giannis as a disappointment because you only got past the Conference Semifinals, when realistically, they may be the two best teams left. And so when you look at like the organization as a whole, Saturday was much even, you know, more bigger than I even realized it when you looked back at the history of what that organization was.
Oh, no question. No question. And okay, so who was on that team that was Eastern Conference Finals, right? That was Ray was, Allen,
yep,
Glenn
Big
Robinson,
Dog, Sam Cassell.
Sam Cassell. Who else?
Tim Thomas. Remember?
Thomas.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Thomas was a part of that team. Scott Williams. I think Jason Caffey was there. They were
Jason
really
Caffey.
Good.
That's a good one. That's a good blast from the past. People forget Jason Caffey was I'm going to say mid first round draft pick of the Bulls. He was supposed to be kind of be that next generation of Bulls guys. He didn't really, he never really became that guy. He's like a face up power forward out of Alabama, right? But yeah, they had, that was a talented team. Now was that a, I'm trying to think who was the coach. Was Donnie?
It was George Karl.
George Karl.
Yeah, was the coach.
You forget how many coach, how many different teams George Karl has coached.
Yeah.
Because we think of Seattle, we think of Denver, right? And you're like, what else am I missing? Like Milwaukee, they were really good.
Mm-hmm. And then the next year they brought in Anthony Mason, and then the next year they traded Ray Allen for Sam Cassell, or excuse me, for Gary Payton. So
wow,
yeah, but that was the high point. That was the high watermark for Bucks basketball, and even the Raptors series 2 years ago. People forget that the Bucks were up 2-0 in that series. You didn't think that Game 3, which went to overtime, was going to be as it was, and it ended up being because the Raptors then won the next four. But there was never a point where they had an opportunity to clinch and move on in that series, even though they were up 2-0 and again in overtime in Game 3. And that's what made this past Saturday. It was do or die. And I think a lot of people now feel like they'll be able to handle the Hawks and get to an NBA Finals, but it's the biggest series in, you know, 40 years, biggest game in 40 years probably that the Bucks had on Saturday night.
You know what's amazing? I mean, this is like how things kind of come together, right? Like you go back to when did Kyrie get hurt? Was it last Sunday?
It was game four. Yeah. I can't remember the days, but it was game four because it was a 2-1 lead. So he played in game three.
Okay, so he plays in game three, gets hurt in game four. It's still at 2-2, right? And you're like, okay, he rolled his ankle. How bad could it be? But at that point in time, you're thinking Mike Budenholzer is going to get fired. Maybe the Bucks need to continue to revamp their roster, right? There's all this.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Bucks are the favorite. And Fiserv Forum, like that place is spectacular. And I think all the restrictions are off in Milwaukee too, right? It's going to be a zoo.
Yeah.
An absolute zoo. And so here you have a small market. And the interesting thing about Milwaukee is it's like only an hour and a half from Chicago. It's like, I mean, honestly, the Calabasas and the San Clemente, if you look at the distance, really, and how long it would actually take you to get there to the Forum, like, it's not that different. It's not that far from, you could live in the northernmost suburbs of Chicago and go to Milwaukee for games, and it's not that far. Anyway, this is kind of the plan, right? Like, all right, here's what we're going to do. And the guys that bought the team were MSG guys, right? And I don't mean monosodium glutamate. I mean, they're from Madison Square Garden. They buy this thing. They commit to part of the fine print Herb Cole put in there. They can't move the team. So they build a new arena. They build a new practice facility. They get Giannis. They build the whole thing around Giannis. And then, you know, last year, you're like, oh, this thing might come apart. They re-sign Giannis. Now you're like, I don't know. They might win the whole damn thing.
Yeah, they have home court now. I mean, Philadelphia out, it's crazy. It's, you know, at least, you know, in the Hawks series. So that, yeah, it's how quickly it turns around. And it's even a little bit of 2019. Like you thought about, okay, well, if the Warriors, and to your point, if you're, you know, the injuries or not, you play the game and whoever wins. But when you look back at 2019, you're also saying, man, if we knew all the Warriors were going to get hurt in the playoffs, maybe that would have been the season to do it. But now you look at here, maybe this is their opportunity. If they play Phoenix, they had them and Phoenix played a couple of epic games in the regular season. I don't want to get too far ahead, but I think that would be a very entertaining NBA Finals series if it were those two teams.
Mm-hmm. No, it'd be great. And, you know, Milwaukee, you know, obviously kind of like the ugly stepchild of Chicago for so long, watching them win so many championships. And Phoenix, I mean, like, look, if you go back, Arizona Cardinal football games used to be Dallas Cowboy home games when Dallas would come to town. And Phoenix Sun basketball games for the last 15 years or so have been Laker home games, right? Like, if you go to a Suns Lakers game, it has been Kobe Bryant, Kobe Bryant Central.
Yeah.
Really, since the Steve Nash thing era kind of ended or whatever, it's been a Laker home game. And, you know, now you have the chance. Maybe, we'll see, because the Clippers still have a chance. Do you think Kawhi's going to play? Like, I don't understand if he's got a torn ACL. Why don't they just say he has a torn ACL?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it's great. Even if it was an ACL sprain.
Well, a sprain, people understand a sprain is there's a slight tear to a ligament. Now, there's a chance there where they're going, like, well, it's not a full tear. And so, like, hey, you can go play on it and it's going to tear. We're going to have surgery anyway. You know, as soon as the swelling goes down, you just give it a go. And if it pops, it pops. That's a possibility. It's a possibility.
That would be that would. I don't think we'll see him. I'll just put it that way.
I don't either. I'm just offering up that as a possibility.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of the 5th Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is the 5th Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to the 5th Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
I didn't tell you guys what happened last night. I wasn't fully honest with you, and I apologize. This is a hard one. I'll be okay. John, I could use a bit of a hug. I got out-ribbed by my 15-year-old daughter. Oh, yeah, it hurts. All right, here's what happened. So I got to pick, you know, like, oh, what do you want to do? I was like, it's beautiful. It's sunny. Heat up the pool. I'm going to get some swine. And then we're going to cook. My daughter Grace and I, we love to cook. We just cooked, cut up a watermelon. By the way, a watermelon is so hard to pick out. It's the best fruit, but it's so hard to pick out. And I think I'm a pretty good thumper, you know. Look for the spot where it was sitting. You know, it's a little bit whiter, you know, a flat spot. And then you got to thump it. So difficult. Really is like What game show was it? Well, like, what's behind door number 3? Was it Let's Make a Deal? Feels like Let's Make a Deal. No idea what's behind that door. Anyway, so I got two different. I got a rack of baby back, and then I got a rack of St. Louis style pork ribs. And what we want to do is like, all right, I'm going to make the baby back and you make the pork and you make it your way and I'll make it my way. And we'll see whose ribs are better. So she went with the St. Louis ribs. She went St. Louis style, which is you put the sauce on the ribs. I went more like Memphis style. I like dry rub. Although, honestly, I also love Carolina barbecue, which you put some vinegar in there. But anyway, so I went like more Memphis dry rub style. My rub, I didn't make my own. Instead, I used a pre-made rub, and it was a little too salty, if that's possible. I've swollen up like a grape. Anyway, her ribs were just better. Like, not really that close. which there's a point of pride to it, but also a lot of disappointment in myself. Let's get to what the Fox said.
What does the Fox say?
Ramos, your favorite kind of ribs or what?
You mean like what, like short ribs? Is that what you mean? Or the
I say ribs, you're like, you know what kind of ribs I like? I like pork. I like this style. I like this
I actually
sauce
like
no
Korean
sauce.
Ribs, if you
Korean
ever had.
Korean barbecue ribs.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very
They're
good.
Kind of thin on the meat, though. They don't have as much meat, but they are very, very good. You can eat a lot more of them. How's that?
you can. There's just like bones
they are
everywhere. Everywhere.
A lot of bones, yeah.
Every day this time, what we do is we try and pick a different portion of a show that we like and something we heard, and then we comment on it. This is Colin Cowherd talking about the Suns.
This is why I like the Phoenix Suns. They're old school. Everybody has a defined role. None of this positionless basketball nonsense. They have a true point guard in Chris Paul, though he didn't play yesterday. They have a dominant shooting guard. That's what it's called, a shooting guard. Devin Booker. They have two athletic wings. Both can finish. Both can hit a three. Mikhail Bridges, Jay Crowder. One's a veteran. One's a kid. And then they have an athletic big, DeAndre Ayton, who likes being big. He likes being around the basket. They don't do load management in Phoenix. And defined roles matter. Phoenix has people, 3-and-D, true point guard, legitimate scorer, big who likes being a big. They actually play 9 guys. Like, I like Phoenix. They're old school, built through the draft, no load management. By the way, and this is crazy, their players play all their games. That's why their chemistry is so good.
No question. And despite the fact they've played all their games, they've also, with the exception of Chris Paul early on in the playoffs, now Chris Paul, obviously, COVID protocols, they've been healthy. Usually we're told the more games you play, the more likely you are to have injury. It should be pointed out that many of their stars are 24 or younger. You know, Mikhail Bridges is young, DeAndre Ayton's young, and obviously Devin Booker's young. So some of that is they're younger, they're able to play more games and able to stay healthy. But I have nothing bad to say about the Suns. I mean, I don't think they beat the Lakers if the Lakers are healthy. Like that's the real net kind of takeaway is the Lakers wanted to play the Suns and felt like the Suns couldn't beat them because the Lakers were bigger and the Suns matched up poorly with them because of the power forward position, they're not particularly big. But I like the Suns. And yes, there is a traditional sense to them. But also remember, they're playing the Clippers without Kawhi. They played the Lakers without Anthony Davis. Like, these are legit advantages that don't delegitimize their run. It just gives us the real context to the run.
What does the Fox say?
Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. So, Beyer, when you're sitting at home watching golf with your son and he's taking a nap, did that take you away from the grill? Like, what did you do? Like, how does
grilled
this
salmon yesterday, Doug? Salmon. Pretty, yeah, it's a pretty quick grill, so that's what worked
it's
out
good.
Great.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a good one. How do you grill your salmon?
I actually go, everybody says skin down first. I do skin up first, so it gets the char marks on the salmon and then flip it over. Probably about 7 minutes on each side.
What do you season it with?
I just, you know, some store seafood seasoning, I think it's a Paul Prudhomme seafood seasoning. So it's very good.
We're giving Paul Prudhomme a little free advertising there.
I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Can I give you a next time you do salmon thing?
Sure.
Molasses.
Mmm.
Molasses.
Okay.
You can do you could also do maple syrup too. Molasses.
All right.
Molasses on both sides. Spray the grill.
Yep.
Whichever side you want to do first, don't care. You get that little sweetness to it. Get that little sweetness. What do we learn from the Ben Simmons episode? Find out next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.